The Web Talk Guys radio show is connecting. During the next hour, the Web Guys will launch you into the future of the internet with hot insider tips from tech execs right from the front lines. The audio download begins now.
Welcome to the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for joining us and listening again today on CNET Radio and on the XM Satellite Radio Network, streaming nationwide, and possibly streaming from WebTalkGuys.com.
Possibly.
And also, we got to add another one, CNETRadio.com, which is another terrific place to go listen to the Web Talk Guys, or even on your telephone from the mobile broadcasting network out there. So this is the place to hear about the future of the internet and technology trends out there.
And Rob, my dear, you are not alone here. I'm ever faithful by your side. My name is Dana, and I'm here to keep Rob on his toes.
And she does.
You know, neither of us are really alone, actually, because you are out there, and it's a real privilege for us to have you on board once again this week. You know, I spend a ton of time, Rob, in front of the computer alone, and it's nice to know that all of you are plugged into the Web Talk Guys. Well, we promise to deliver to you the voices of the internet from the techies, from Microsoft, from everyone all over Cyberland. And if you're listening to us on the radio right now, you should make our website part of your experience. We're at webtalkguys.com.
We certainly like to hear from you, too. And any thoughts or suggestions, just email us at robg@webtalkguys.com. Or even if you want to send them to dana@webtalkguys.com, that would be okay as well. And in fact, this week we heard from a listener, and the listener is in Rock Hill, South Carolina. His name is Kevin, and he sent us an email asking us if there's any way that we could offer a downloadable MP3 player version of our show. And we certainly would love to do that for you, Kevin, and we thank you for your comment. We can definitely add that MP3 version to this week's show, and if we see enough downloads of that, we'll just keep it going on a regular basis.
Well, since Kevin and maybe more of you want to take the show with you wherever you go rather than sit in front of your computer, well, we have a nice announcement for you. You may know that you can get our show on your home or cell phone. Yeah, on the telephone. We're giving you this little bit of freedom away from your computer. And you don't have to even miss any of the internet radio stations out there, any music or news or, of course, Web Talk Guys.
Carry it with you.
We're proud to be affiliated with that mobile broadcasting network that you mentioned earlier in the show. That's at mymbn.com. You get to hear your favorite internet station anywhere, anytime, as long as you have your cell phone with you or your access to your telephone. Now, let me just paint a picture here for you. You're waiting for the bus or the commuter train if you're in Boston. Or maybe you're sitting at Starbucks and you're waiting for that late client and you just don't want to, you know, be sitting there listening to your MP3 player with your headphones on. Or, you know, you want to look busy. You're talking on the phone when your client comes in or you have the phone to your ear. So what can they do?
They can listen to their phone and listen to the Web Talk Guys on their phone, no less. So it's really cool. You know, I mean, what does a cell phone do but transmit audio, right? It's an audio communication device, so it certainly makes sense to listen to audio on your cell phones. Some of the other stations that can be listened to on the mobile broadcasting network are like Fox News, Associated Press, and every other kind of music genre you can think of. So get connected and listen to internet radio on the go. Just go to webtalkguys.com and sign up for the mobile broadcasting network and receive your first week free.
Okay, we've got an excellent show lined up for you today. First up, right after our break, we're taking you on a little excursion to a technology convention that the Web Talk Guys attended a few weeks back. We were at the South Sound Technology Conference. By the way, that's at sst2002.com. And we had a chance to talk with one of the world's leading security research and development firms. They're called Sajam Morpho. It's at morpho.com. Their core business really focuses on biometrics. It's basically, they make the technology that figures out who you are based on your fingerprints. We'll be sharing my brief conversation with Sajam Morpho's Rick Walker. He's the manager of Civil and Conversion Systems Engineering right after our break.
And it even gets better because right after Sajam Morpho, we're going to talk about one of the hottest topics online right now, and it's privacy. And no company has been more scrutinized than Microsoft in regards to privacy. And Microsoft's foremost challenge may be persuading millions of computer users that it can be trusted with personal information needed to provide software and services, especially the web services that are coming. The man in charge of Microsoft's dedication to privacy is Richard Purcell, who's a 10-year Microsoft veteran who directs the company's privacy efforts. And Richard is going to join us today to talk about digital privacy. And he's also going to tell us about Microsoft's privacy task force. So it should be really interesting.
Speaking of software, Rob, we're seeing a shift in the kind of programming language skills that techie employers are looking for. Right after our Microsoft visit, we're going to discuss the trends in the techie workplace for all those that are concerned about what IT skills that are in demand right now. For instance, did you know that for the second consecutive year, Unix reigns supreme in the Techies.com Techie Skills Demand Index?
Doesn't really surprise me.
Techies.com editor Nick Dottie will be here to talk about the Skills Demand Index results. Well, we need to take a quick break, but please stay connected because in seconds we'll bring you a conversation with Sajam Morfo.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Our whole world is sitting there on a computer, and there's like this little electronic shadow on each and every one of us just begging for somebody to screw with.
Thank you for listening to Web.Guys Radio, and welcome back. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana. And if you're plugged into the technology buzzwords these days, you already know that the economic and physical security of business and individuals are the big topics. Well, last month, the Web.Guys took our mics to a technology convention, the South Sound Technology Conference. The convention was set up as a forum designed to further the growth of technology and to really talk about the global technology issues. The topic at hand for this convention was security.
We had a chance to talk with one of the world's leading security research and development firms, Sajam Morfo at morfo.com. That's morpho.com. And they've been around for over 20 years, and their core business focuses on biometrics. And that is, they make technology that figures out who you are based on your fingerprints. And they also work with the federal government and the commercial sectors. Sajam Morfo is based in Tacoma, Washington. Their parent company, Sajam, is based in Paris and employs more than 13,000 people in more than 20 countries.
And besides biometrics and security, Sajam provides products and services in the field of telecommunications and defense. I talked with Sajam Morfo's Rick Walker. He's the manager of Civil and Conversion Systems Engineering. And here's our conversation from the convention floor.
I'm Rick Walker. I'm an engineering manager for Sajam Morfo Incorporated, and we build computer systems for forensic evaluation of fingerprints, use of fingerprints in other identification like ID cards, visas, passport, and internally to the United States, we use it for welfare fraud prevention and other civil applications like that, airport applicant for employment, go through some of our systems.
Name some of your clients, and in this case, would it be our government, our military?
Yes, we partnered with a systems integrator and converted the FBI from card-based to electronic-based. We are currently installing today a new system for the state of New York's Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance, their welfare fraud prevention. We're installing a system for the state police in Arizona, the Department of Public Safety today. We installed last week an airport management application system to send prints to the FBI in Chicago, Gary, Indiana. We have all kinds of systems going in.
The topic of our South Sound Technology Conference is security, and of course the Office of Homeland Security is overseeing a lot of things internally in this country, how to keep us safer, and I think you guys have a hand in that, as you mentioned, with the FBI. And are you doing work with the airlines, you said? What specifically are you doing to help us feel safer in this country?
The airport application is a good one. The Office of Homeland Security and the FAA have directed that that the airport personnel be screened, and so the way that they do that is to collect their information, including fingerprints, at the airport, and submit those to the FBI. And we provide some of those linkages, the systems that they actually sit down and enter the data, and it goes off through the internet to the FBI.
Sajam Morfo is world headquartered in Tacoma, Washington, but also is a French company. How does that work, and where are your real roots?
Our real roots. The company is a wholly owned subsidiary of Sajam Group of France, which is headquartered outside Paris. They are primarily a defense and communications system manufacturer, so they also do cell phones for France and things like that. We're part of the Defense and Security Systems Group, and we are based on technology that was developed in France. And here in the United States, we do primarily customization of those applications, but we also build some applications here in the United States that are specifically for U.S. markets and U.S. customers.
How many people are employed at the U.S. contingent?
It's somewhere around 300, I think.
Well, thank you much. Why don't you end up with giving us the website address?
www.morpho.com, and the parent company is www.sagem.com.
The internet is probably used every day at your job. It's very important to you. Do you access the internet personally at home? And if so, what do you use it mainly for, personally?
Personally? Gee, I'm not sure I have a personal life on the internet. Well, obviously, I use it for personal email because I do have a personal life, and it's a way I'm a retired military, so I keep in touch with all my old military buddies through the internet. I also use it for education. That's how I get knowledge of new sectors of information that I need to work on, new product, new technologies and programming and development environments and things like that. I use the internet. I also use it for genealogy search. I'm the genealogy interested person in my family, so I have that to work on. I use it to keep in touch with my family, most of all of whom live out of the state, and so we're all wired up on email.
Your current profession, you're probably very aware of privacy and security. Now, do you shop online, and is that, if you do, where do you shop? If you don't, is it because of the whole security issue?
I do shop online, and I do shop online based on the accepted security level by the agencies that provide that kind of thing, like VeriSign and some of the other well-known internet signature providers. I do that with nationally recognized companies. Like I shop with Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Spiegel, Eddie Bauer especially. My wife does the Spiegel. I do the Eddie Bauer.
Well, thank you. Anything else you want to comment on in general about the internet?
No, I think it's just the greatest thing that's happened lately. I think the uses of it are yet to be determined, and the more we can figure out how to use it effectively, the better we'll be.
You were just listening to a conversation with Dana and Rick Walker, who is the manager of civil and conversion systems engineering for Sagem Morpho, the fingerprint scanning and security experts. Stay connected, because up next, you're not going to want to miss our conversation with Richard Purcell, who is the director of corporate privacy, and he's going to give us the scoop on what Microsoft is doing to keep your information secure. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
And now, the internet's future, the Web Talk Guys.
Welcome back to the Web Talk Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana. Well, Rob, no company has been scrutinized more than Microsoft, especially when it comes to privacy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think Microsoft's foremost challenge may be persuading millions of computer users it can be trusted with their personal information.
And the man in charge of Microsoft's dedication to privacy is Richard Purcell, and he's a 10-year Microsoft veteran who directs the company's privacy efforts. And we have Richard on the line with us, and he's all ready to talk about some of these controversial privacy issues. Richard, it's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
What is your general view of personal privacy online? And, you know, as we roll into the digital and internet realm here, what's your thoughts, just in general?
Well, the internet has given us a great opportunity to better examine the whole role of how our information is of value to others and how it's used. We're certainly in the internet age today, and one of the things that we've created by doing so is to realize that personal information is of great value to people. It always has been, whether it's offline or online. And we now are examining some of the social policies and the public policies that are part of that, and we think that's a great thing to do.
Well, now, what is Microsoft's overall policies and direction in regards to online privacy?
Bottom line, Rob, is that Microsoft believes that people should control their information, and we think that they're the best keepers of their privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than making decisions on their behalf, we think that they need to be in a position to make their own decisions. Who gets their information? For what purpose? What other purposes can it be used for? So our whole idea is based on full disclosure of, you know, what's going on, and give people as much choice as we can, and then further to protect that data as carefully as we possibly can to make sure it's safe.
What are some of the core issues around online privacy that most people in the industry right now are concerned about?
There's a lot of ways that people are really concerned about their privacy today that really reflect to the way the offline world works as well. For instance, identity. When you walk into a store for the second or third time, the shopkeeper might recognize you but doesn't know you. That's the way cookies work on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's authentication, where you say, hey, my name's Richard. And the person says, well, hello, Richard. Welcome to the store. Now, they don't really know you're Richard or not. It's just the identity you choose. That's authentication, much like we use in Microsoft Passport.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, there's authorization, which really does require you to identify yourself and to be verified because it protects valuable assets like your bank account, for instance.
Also, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the growing concerns out there in relation to the growing use of like personal databases that a lot of corporations are starting to keep on individuals' purchasing patterns, like medical histories. There is a trend out there that I've been seeing. There are companies starting to merge this data together to create larger profiles on.
Actually, those are not new trends at all. People,
okay.
Big businesses have merged databases and have tried to generate profiles on people in the offline world for decades now. And the same practice, of course, is being used today in many ways,
mm-hmm.
because the ultimate result is the customer who's known best is also served best. The idea, though, that we're trying to promote is to make sure the customer is in control of this and mm-hmm. that they are the ones who get to determine how much information is known about them, whether it's information they give or whether it's information that's combined about them.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Microsoft Privacy Task Force? Is that something that's still active and going on at
Yeah,
Microsoft?
It sure is. The Privacy Task Force at Microsoft consists now of up to probably 80 people across the company and across the world. And these are experts and leads in product divisions across the company who are accountable for and experts in their particular area of the company and the privacy policies and practices that we've defined.
So don't you guys also have like an annual summit that you guys all get together and try and address some of the core issues?
Yeah, at least once a year we bring mm-hmm. together at Microsoft an internal meeting that's broader than this 80 to 100 people who are closely involved, and it takes in about 200 or 300 people. And we do product demonstrations, we do a lot of research findings, thinking about what we're doing in the future, how to coordinate across the different companies. So it's very forward-looking and very involving in getting everybody in the company to have this idea that privacy is a part of the design process, and it's fundamental to everything, whether it's a product or a service or a back-end system in the company.
Stay tuned as we will continue our conversation with Richard Purcell, who's the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. This is Web.Guys Radio.
Web.Guys, downloading.
Web.Guys, buffering.
This is Web.Guys Radio, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and we're talking about online privacy with Richard Purcell, who is the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. Well, now, you're also on the Board of Directors for the Trustee Program. Why don't you tell us a bit about that and your involvement in that and what some of the core issues are?
Sure. Microsoft has been a premier sponsor of Trustee since about the time of its founding 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We believe very, very strongly that there's a very good role for an independent organization to define requirements for privacy and data practices, and for that independent organization to provide dispute resolution also, so that if there's a disagreement between a company and an individual, there's somebody who's an objective observer who can help to resolve those kinds of issues. Trustee performs a terrific role yeah. in the marketplace by generating independence and a objective view to raise confidence in these data practices, particularly on the internet.
Trustee was recently involved in some issues regarding online sites changing their privacy policies after they've already collected customer information. What's your thought on that?
Well, it's a tricky issue. Trustee's basic premise is that you've got to tell people what's going on.
Yeah.
So recently a major company said, well, we want to change things because people used to be able to say no. And what we want to do is every year we want to change that to a yes, but let people know that they can always change it back to a no.
Yeah.
And trustees' position as a broad internet program requirements license or is, you know, to set rules that say you have to disclose and you have to give choice. Well, this particular situation met those rules, perhaps at one edge of the rule set. Microsoft as a corporation has a stronger sense that we just won't change your preferences. The individual is in control of their information. You can change your preferences to, you know, yes, send me something right now, and 5 minutes later you can change it to no. It may confuse us a little bit, but it's up to you to make those decisions, not us.
Let's talk a bit about the federal government's involvement in online privacy. Now, I know you've been involved in some work with the FTC and some of the more recent legislation that's coming through, but could you give us an update on kind of where that stands right now? I know that the Hollings bill has been something that's been of issue lately as it relates to online and offline privacy, but could you give us an update?
Both in the federal government and in the state government, there have been, over the last several years, a multitude of proposals for broad guidelines and regulations for the internet for privacy. Our position is we have very strong policies at Microsoft that follow the Fair Information Practices, but we apply them broadly to all of the information about all of our customers, and we think that calling out any particular technology and regulating a technology misses the mark. Any privacy rules should be directed toward the purpose of protecting people's information, regardless of what technology is used to gather that information.
Sure.
So that's one thing. We also believe in choice. As I've said, choice is very important to people, and the more choice you have, the better it is. But we don't want to have regulations that say that choice has to be only one kind of choice. Opt-in is very popular with people to say everything should be opt-in. But that may limit your choices in a lot of ways, and it may put the burden of some effort on the individual, because then you have to go find out what it is somebody offers and ask for it. Otherwise, you'll never know. If I buy a boat and the boat dealer says, hey, I got a bunch of friends who have businesses of boat stuff, and I'm going to let them know that you bought a boat from me so that they can send you boat stuff. And I can say, no thanks. Well, that's an opt-out. That's perfectly reasonable, as long as I know what the deal is, to be able to opt out.
How much involvement do you think the federal government needs to have in the establishment of rules?
Well, we think there's a terrific involvement that they've already been very active in. People are really concerned about their health records, and the federal government has passed the regulations around HIPAA, the HIPPA regulations for privacy. People are concerned about their kids and information kids give websites. And there's been a law already passed called COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Mm-hmm. And finally, there's been federal legislation around your banking records, too, commonly called the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. So in finance, in healthcare, and for children's records, the federal government has acted to prevent real harms that are apparent to people, and that's a good thing.
So do you see that harming the online business in the long run, having so much government regulation, or do you see that as a positive thing, as long as, I guess, they're sensitive to the issues that are online?
Well, again, and it's not just online, and that's an important part. One of the things that's good about Gramm-Leach-Bliley and the HIPAA regulations is it's not just online. It talks about your relationships with your health providers and your relationships with your banks, regardless of the technology. And that's a good thing. That's where we think it's a positive.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned in, because you're not going to want to miss the continuing conversation that we're having with Richard Purcell, who's Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. This is WebTalk Guys Radio.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, get in there and talk about www.com, you got them naked chicks on there, man, you go click, 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 it's real easy, man.
Get your dot-com drama, your startup, crash and burn report, your high-tech hoopla right here, right now on the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show.
Thank you for joining us on the Web.Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and I have WebGirl Dana here. We're talking about privacy online, and we're speaking with Richard Purcell, who is the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. Let's talk about the .NET My Services program. I guess you guys have been trying to get this moved forward and launched, and could you give us an update on that?
Sure. .NET My Services is a great idea that Microsoft is promoting, and we're working very hard to bring to the market, where instead of having your information tied up in a device and separated from you because you may not have access to that mm-hmm. device, the idea is to store information in a service that would be on the Internet that would allow you to get at that information anytime, any place, from any device. I'd love to have my address book be mastered by some service so that all of the devices I use have the same view of that information. That'd mm-hmm. be a great thing
oh,
for
yeah,
me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's any number of pieces of information, whether it's your email or your contacts, whatever, even your documents, that you could do that. So if it works that I get all of my stuff across any device, that'd be cool. And then if I could, like, let my spouse, my wife, have access to certain ones of those with restricted privileges, that could be very helpful too. Mm-hmm. So she could see my appointments, she could see my contacts, I could see hers. But that has to be gated with real strong permissions. And again, we go back to the whole idea that the individual has to be in control. And so if you take that concept and then start thinking about how that would work, it's easy to see that it could, if it works well and if you have the proper controls, it could gradually expand. So first it starts with yourself, then it starts with people who are, you know, you trust very highly, and then it might expand to other people that you trust, like your doctor or your accountant or your dentist, with really limited privileges that you provide to them. And then it could go to, you know, it could keep expanding. As long as the services provide privacy and security, we think that it's really powerful and very useful to people.
So the overall vision here is to be able to have one repository of all of your vital information that you can use to conduct transactions, send emails, to have access to medical records,
well, it's not
and
necessarily,
a whole bunch of stuff?
It's not necessarily
idea?
One repository. It is a central, it is a service that manages whatever data you want it to
okay.
manage. And, of course, you could have various services managing different kinds of data. As an example, I might have some email provider taking care of that part of my life so I can get to that data from any device mm-hmm. at any time, but I might have somebody else managing my contacts or my documents or something else.
Sure.
So you can choose different providers in this scenario and have them manage different kinds of data, and that way you prevent the whole idea that somebody can put your life together and create this massive profile on you.
Oh, okay. Now, would this program ultimately, if you extend it out to like a wallet concept, which I know you guys have worked on, could even replace credit cards, could replace driver's license IDs, all those type of things down the line?
Well, I think that at the point that you start talking about, you know, real strong authorization where you need verification, you have to have real trust providers. So, yeah, it could. But, again, you're stepping up the kinds of security requirements and the kinds of controls you have to put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can envision how technologically that can happen. At the same time, you have to be very thoughtful as to whether it's useful to people. So carrying my credit card around is, you know, pretty easy for me, and I haven't had any trouble in my life with having people steal it because
yeah.
I'm pretty careful with it.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, you know, it may be useful to have some pay method so that a trusted third party can essentially say to the for the transaction, don't worry about Richard's payment. I'll make sure you get paid for it. And therefore, there may be a way for a Visa or another credit card company, a MasterCard or American Express or something like that, to not send the account information, but rather to send a token that says, don't worry about it, you'll get paid. And
oh.
if we can build that kind of trust, then we diminish the amount of data that's being collected as well.
Stay tuned as we will continue our conversation with Richard Purcell, who's the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. This is Web.Guys Radio.
Do things, man. things that way anymore. This is the age of science know-how. Electron marbles.
This internet station sounds great on your computer, but you don't want to sit around in front of your computer all day. You have a life.
You got it.
Places to be and people to see.
You got that right.
Thanks to the Mobile Broadcast Network, you can take your tunes with you anywhere, anytime, and listen to your favorite internet station on your cell phone.
Awesome.
Get hooked up. The Mobile Broadcast Network is brought to you exclusively by XS Voice.
I'll be listening.
The Web.Guy is proud to be affiliated with the Mobile Broadcast Network. Just use any wireless phone to dial and access to amazing content like the Web.Guys, the Fox News Channel, Associated Press, the Vatican Radio, Israel Radio, Virgin Radio, all starting at under $6 a month. To get connected to the Web.Guys and other great news and music on your cell phone, click on over to www.webtalkguys.com and sign up at the Web.Guys Mobile Broadcast Network link.
They make it possible for you to hear your favorite internet station anytime, anywhere, on your cell phone, and listen to internet radio on the go.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk, totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and we're talking about online privacy with Richard Purcell, who's the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft. We've had past guests on the show that have talked about active agents that work on your behalf, basically software agents that negotiate and purchases and your appointments, all those type of things for you. Is that kind of the natural extension here of where this could go in the future if we did have those proper permissions and security precautions?
Yes, I think that's right, Rob. And I think that what you're getting into now is the whole notion of trustworthy computing, effort that Microsoft has addressed very directly over the last several months to help further the whole industry in understanding how to raise confidence in computing and technology so that these kinds of scenarios where very strong trust relationships exist raise the confidence of people. It's kind of funny when you think about it. People don't like to do online banking.
Yeah.
But what they do instead is they walk into a bank and give a stranger the information for them to key it into a system.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that people will say, I don't want to do online banking because I don't trust it. I'd rather go give my information to a stranger at a bank and have them key it for me.
Yeah, it's the same situation that happened with credit cards for, you know, at the very early days of the internet. People felt fearful in giving them out, but they would give it to a waiter at a hotel or a restaurant.
And that's still true.
Yeah.
And so what we have to do is we have to do the hard work it's going to take to improve the dependability, the reliability, the security, the privacy of various technologies in order to have consumer confidence to actually realize these very cool scenarios that we can see in the future that'll save us all a lot of time and money.
Yeah, what specific things do you think have to fall into place before the general public would accept that level of trust, I guess?
Well, we think that there's a number of things, and it's a very large project. So we're looking, you know, forward to several years of work on this. But we think in the short term, we have to really work on policies and data practices. We have to support independent organizations like Trustee and BBB Online. We have to agree to some standards and to abide by certain standards and have trusted third parties available to attest that we are abiding by certain standards, like security standards, operational standards, privacy standards, those kinds of things. We also need to have pretty widespread security technologies at the edges of the network, right down to the home computer, where the platform itself, the hardware itself, has better built-in security mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we need to do a better job of communicating and informing the marketplace about what kind of work it's going to take from everybody's point of view to just be more careful about our information.
Yeah. Well, now here recently with all of the cyber attacks and the terrorist threats that we're all aware of, you know, are we all really being succumbed to a certain level of privacy invasion just to be able to, you know, enable our law enforcement to be able to find terrorists within our, you know, within the country? What's your thought on that?
Well, historically, this has been a cycle that we go through on a fairly regular basis. Certainly during any time of war, like World War II, there was the amount of privacy a person could expect was diminished at least partly by the need for the community to gather together and to fight a common enemy. The same thing, of course, happened during the Cold War. The same thing happened during the Vietnam period. The same thing's happening today in the period where terrorist attacks are our main concern. We absolutely cannot ever say that we're going to live in a world that has absolute privacy, because that gives too many places for bad guys to hide. Mm-hmm. We also can't say we're going to live in a world of absolute security, because that gives up too many of our fundamental rights that we believe in as free human beings. So the question isn't one way or the other. The question is, how do we do a really good job of balancing out these big community needs for safety and security against our individual needs for autonomy and privacy?
Mm-hmm. And how do you see that playing out? I mean, is it going to take years of building trust and developing the technology to actually get to the point where everybody is using a, let's say, a PDA with a wireless internet connection to transmit data to fulfill an order or to close a transaction?
Well, we think that those kinds of technologies, I mean, they're available today. The question is whether or not people will trust them sufficiently to use them. But this is a journey. There is no destination here, Rob. Mm-hmm. We'll always have conflict and contradictions and tensions between the idea of security and privacy. We have to join those two together with an and statement. Security and privacy have to go hand in hand. Yeah. It's not security against privacy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Richard, it was terrific having you on the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Rob. Thank you very much.
And it's fantastic, some of the things that Microsoft is working on, and we definitely look forward to them in the future.
Great. Thanks, Rob.
We've been having a conversation with Richard Purcell, who's the Director of Corporate Privacy at Microsoft.
Stay connected, because in a moment we'll be talking with Nick Doughty, he's the Editor-in-Chief at Techies.com, about the new hot programming languages to learn and what tech employers are looking for.
This is WebTalk Guys Radio.
The WebTalk guys are thrilled to be your radio hosts, but we'd also be thrilled to host your website, too. The WebTalk guys' website hosting service combines a high-speed, dedicated internet connection and the marketing power of a link from the show's website to help you. We offer all the standard hosting stuff for a very low, limited-time hosting price of only $10 a month for the first 3 months. To learn more, go to WebTalkGuys.com and click on Web Services or email info@WebTalkGuys.com. You can reach us by calling area code 253-640-0164. WebTalk guys, not just your radio hosts, but also your total hosting solution.
The WebTalk Guys, here and now.
Welcome back to the WebTalk Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana, and for all of you who are concerned about what IT skills are in demand right now, we're going to check out the trends in the techie workplace.
Yeah, for the second consecutive year, Unix reigns supreme in the Techies.com Tech Skills Demand Index, and we have Techies.com editor Nick Doughty on the line with us right now to tell us all about this Skills Demand Index and all the results. Nick, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be back.
Hey, why don't you tell us a bit about this information that you've just recently released that talks about how Unix is reigning supreme as far as what employers are looking for out there.
This is our annual Tech Skills Demand Index, where we compare the shift in demand over the past year between skills demanded by employers. It's a really simple index that we pull based on our job listings on the site. So wherever we find the most occurrences of a certain skill requested in those job listings, depending on how many times that job listing appears in the overall nationwide job listings, that gets a certain ranking from us. And Unix in general was again on top this year, and also specifically the Unix Tornado Development Forum, which is kind of an emerging hybrid, if you will. It's kind of a hard thing to describe, but it's just a new way of using the Unix platform for delivering enterprise solutions. We've seen a lot of demand in security-related skills increase. Of course, Unix is a very widely used technology among employers, and it's ever-growing, what with all the core systems projects going on and security projects going on.
So would you say that the Unix operating system is seeing a resurgence of interest on the part of employers? And why is that? Or has it always been this strong?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a resurgence. I think it's really maintained its dominance in demand. We have seen for the last 2 years consecutively employers focusing on more core systems and development projects, such as the infrastructure, their platforms, operating systems, less focus on GUI and some of the more front-end stuff that you see with internet technologies. And Unix has really maintained its lead in the last year as far as the general demand goes. I think last year it was in, slightly over 14% of all of our job listings.
And Nick, I'm curious about this new Unix system that you mentioned, the Tornado.
Yes.
Is this something that, I know that techies.com has courses or ways you can educate yourself. Is this something that can be learned at techies.com to make ourselves more desirable to employers?
Yeah, you can access our course catalog, and we have dozens of Unix courses. The Tornado development is not something that we specifically offer among our courses right now. But if techies were interested in that, there are definitely places out there that are training on that. There's all of these crossover technologies right now, and with the emergence of .NET, and that competing with Java and all of these other technologies. And people are wondering, how are we going to integrate all of these into companies and come up with one big solution? Unix Tornado development seems to be an emerging successful combination out there. And so it's it's not something that's easily offered in our courseware, but people can certainly get, 75 to 80% of their necessary training if they wanted to be certified for a networking position involving Unix technology.
Nick, with any index that researches what's hot, you have to always look at the opposite side, what's not. And I found it really interesting in your report what wasn't as desirable for employers, like HTML skills. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I explained that a little bit in the article. HTML is almost becoming an assumed skill. If you have a college degree and it has anything to do with computer science, or if you even have an associate's degree or any kind of certification, most people are assuming that you're versed in HTML, especially with programmers, developers. If they know Java, if they know C++, that's, just kind of your stepping stone to getting that Java C++ knowledge. So employers might not necessarily even list that in their job descriptions. And so it's really hard for me to determine if HTML's use or popularity has slid in the past year or so. I think that it's definitely in as high as demand as it ever has been.
Yeah, I would think
so. Because it's so widely used, but it's not necessarily going to be posted if you have all of these other emerging technologies that are kind of your second and third step to being an experienced web developer.
Yeah, certainly I would think that would be just a core skill set.
Sure.
People just take for granted everybody has that skill set. Stay tuned as we will continue speaking with Nick Doughty, who is the editor of techies.com, a large tech career website out there. And he's talking about IT skills that are in demand right now in the tech workplace.
Damage control is easy. Reading Klingon, that's hard.
Welcome back to the WebTalk Guys World Radio Show. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and WebGirl Dana's here. We're talking about IT skills that are in demand right now in the tech workplace. And we're speaking with Nick Doughty, who's the editor of techies.com. Why has Visual Basic and C language kind of declined? Is there any indications?
Yeah, I think Visual Basic and C language are just victims. That might be too strong of a word, but they have their makers, and with the ever-emerging technologies by Microsoft, they're just going to be replaced by quicker, faster, younger technologies. And I don't see the slide being anything very dramatic, like all of a sudden, within a couple years or even 5 years, they're going to be obsolete.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people thought COBOL or Pascal technologies were going to be completely wiped out and that all of those COBOLers would be done after Y2K, but companies are finding a lot of benefits to maintaining these legacy technologies. Even the popularity of the mainframe seems to be kind of coming up because for platforms, when you're concerned about security, the mainframe seems to be a safer option. So
yeah.
Companies that might have been a little nervous about that in the past are no longer as nervous about deploying some of the latest technologies. They want something that works, and it's not necessarily the newest, latest, and greatest technology. And we've seen that through Windows XP and other technologies that haven't really solved as many issues as we thought.
Well, that and plus I would think a lot of the newer programming languages have fewer people out there that can develop against them, and those folks make a lot of money. So if they're going to develop something cost effectively, they're going to use existing labor force out there and existing technologies, right?
Correct. And I should add, too, there's all of these reports, too, with the baby boomers reaching retirement age. You know, the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be expecting a lot of demand increases for people to learn some of these legacy technologies because companies are not expecting to just dump them. These managers or on down to your beginning level techies are going to see a lot of opportunity to step in and learn these technologies. And so I think the government especially is starting to get nervous about this inevitable dramatic change and turnover in the workforce.
Well, certainly C++ and XML and SQL are strong technologies out there right now. And your study shows that those are remaining strong. What's kind of driving those?
I think C++, like I had touched on with COBOL, it's just such a good, solid, versatile skill technology. And you're finding similar success with Java. It's such a great skill that was really deployed and adapted by so many corporations out there that it's really going to take a long time for people to start worrying about their skills. C++ technologies decreasing in demand. C# is on the way up, but when these skills come out and you hear about the hottest skills, it's important to differentiate between hot skills and demanded skills because the overall demand of a skill really tells you what the job market for your skills are out there. The hot skills don't. You know, you hear about XML or you hear about .NET. The employers aren't going to buy that technology and deploy it, you know, within months. That's going to be a several-year process to transition to that. For those web developers out there that are schooled and trained in C++ or Java, you really shouldn't be as worried about spending another 10 grand or whatever it takes to take a boot camp to train in the latest technology.
What is your thought on what kind of broad skill sets an employee needs to develop out there? Because it looks like companies are laying people off, they're adding more responsibilities to existing positions, and the people need to have a diverse background, don't they?
Yeah, I think the best example for a job function that has evolved with the market change, and hence you've needed to apply a broader skills base, is the project manager position.
Mm-hmm.
Project managers used to be more involved from the 30,000-foot level, managing integrations and software development projects. Well, now they're the ones doing coding. They're the ones that are using some of their skills that maybe they haven't used as much in the past, and so they're doing less management. And so with that, you're seeing people that are taking on what used to be four or five different positions. They're doing QA, they're doing security, and that can be applied across a number of positions. Network administrators, for instance, they're not just managing a network or setting it up. They're doing the whole process. They're taking ownership of integration. They might be even involved in software asset management.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of needs out there for companies to find the overall techie that can come in and really drive the business using a variety of technologies and using knowledge that they've acquired through training or through just past job experiences. So you're definitely getting an opportunity, if you are employed, of course, to use everything that you've learned now. It's all coming into play. You're not just the programmer anymore.
Well, Nick, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
And calling in and giving us an update here from techies.com.
Sure.
We've been speaking with Nick Doughty, who's the editor of techies.com. Go check it out. They've got some terrific information resources, and if you happen to be looking for a job, that's a great place to check out, too.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and that's it for this week.
Please meet us here next week and tell your friends about the show. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.